you were saying, I understand why you had to leave here, but it was still quite a shock to come home this evening.
This is Joe Kendrick from radio station WNCW. Glad to let you know that you're listening to 103.3 WSFM LP Asheville, the rockinest station from the French Broad River Basin, Asheville FM.
Back in the streets again, where the noise is nice and loud. Thoughts in the crowd, 'cause I try so hard since you've been away to fill each lonely hour of the day. I stop to eat almost every sign, but when day is done, I still find I just I can't seem to get you out of my mind. No, 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 I can't seem to get you out of my mind. The neon lights appear to spill your name through eyes that tear.
Programming support is brought to you by West Village Market and Deli. Located at 771 Haywood Road in West Asheville, the West Village Market offers all organic produce, groceries with a focus on local. Orders can be placed for delivery or pickup at westvillagemarket.com.
Like a grain of sand that wants to be a rolling stone, I want to be the man I'm not.
You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville in the CAFM News Hour. I'm News Team Correspondent Lance Geyer. The AFM NewsHour theme music is composed by local artist Alicia Pieces. Views and opinions expressed on the AFM NewsHour do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, its board of directors, or programming sponsors. For questions, feedback, story suggestions, and more, feel free to email us at news@ashevillefm.org. You can also find our stories on Facebook at Asheville FM. On today's edition of the AFM NewsHour, you'll hear an interview with City of Asheville's Transportation Management. You'll hear from Kendall Wimberly, the Director of Policy for Toxic Free WNC. You'll get the weekly activism calendar, where you can learn how to get involved in your community this week. You'll get the tailgate market report and the weekly astronomy segment called Cosmic Brew, and more. But first, let's take a look at this week's headlines. In local news, several Western North Carolina art organizations, including LEAF Global Arts and Asheville Creative Arts, have had their federal grants terminated by the National Endowment for the Arts under new directives from the Trump administration. LEAF lost $35,000 in funding for its spring retreat, while Asheville Creative Arts lost $15,000 for the youth theater production. The cuts aimed at redirecting funds to new federal priorities threaten free and accessible art programming in rural and undeserved counties. Affected organizations have been given 7 days to appeal and now face uncertainty as future funding remains in question. A new report from the Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Program, or ASAP, highlights the devastating impact of Hurricane Helene on nearly 900 small family-owned farms in West North Carolina. According to the report, 86% of farms sustained physical damage, with nearly 70% affected in their land or waterways. While most of the damage did not exceed 25% of the farm's total operation, the financial toll was significant, averaging $40,000 in recovery cost and around $30,000 in lost sales per farm in 2024. These combined damages and losses represent 88% of the average farm's annual gross sales, leaving many farmers facing difficult decisions between rebuilding and selling to developers. At a Rotary District conference in Asheville on May 10th, an altercation occurred involving North Carolina Congressman Chuck Edwards. According to the Rotarian and event sponsor Guy Gooder, Edwards struck a man with a clipboard after being criticized for using his speech to defend Donald Trump and disparage federal agencies like the State Department and WHO. Groups the Rotary often partners with in global health efforts like the polio eradication. Edwards claimed the man was intoxicated and belligerent, while Gooder insists that the man was calm and seated when Edwards struck him. Police confirmed the disturbance and have not released any details. No arrests were made. The Rotary later apologized for the incident. In state news, on the morning of May 10th, a 4.1 magnitude earthquake struck south of Knoxville, Tennessee, shaking areas across East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and parts of the upstate, including as far south as Atlanta. Though not strong enough to cause significant damage, the quake was widely felt due to its size, which was larger than the region's typical seismic activity. The East Tennessee seismic zone where it occurred is known for frequent but usually minor earthquakes. According to the USGS, shaking was reported from Tennessee to Kentucky border to northern Georgia. Justice Allison Riggs was officially sworn in to the North Carolina Supreme Court on May 13th, ending a six-month legal battle over her narrow 2024 election win. Riggs, a Democrat, defeated Republican Judge Jefferson Griffin just by 734 votes. Griffin challenged the results, seeking to throw out thousands of ballots from Democratic counties. Though the Republican-majority NC Supreme Court initially sided with him, a federal judge blocked the ruling, declaring it unconstitutional. At her swearing-in, Riggs called the outcome of the win a win for democracy and criticized Griffin's challenge as harmful and politically motivated. Justice Anita Earls, who mentored Riggs and disdained the case, administered the oath. Griffin remains on the NC Court of Appeals. Scott Schwarzweger, a 47-year-old special education teacher at Carver Elementary School in Wake County, has been charged with assaulting students. He faces 5 felony counts of assault on an individual with a disability and 5 counts of assault on a child under 12. The charges follow an investigation into the reports of alleged assault received by Wake County Public Schools on May 9th. Schwarzweger was arrested and processed in the Wake County Detention Center on Tuesday. He has been suspended by the district and the investigation is still ongoing. In national and international news, Israeli targets Hamas leader Sinwar in a hospital strike. On May 13th, Israel launched an airstrike on a European hospital in southern Gaza, targeting Hamas leader Mohamed Sinwar. The attack at Hamas command center killed 6 Palestinians and injured 40. While Israel did not confirm Sinwar's death, sources say that he was the intended target. Sinwar, who took over after his brother's death, is a key figure behind Hamas's military operations. The strike comes amid rising tensions, including a rocket attack from Gaza and Hamas, recent release of Israeli and American hostages, and the Israelis' move is seen as part of efforts to weaken Hamas and potentially influence the ongoing negotiation. On May 14th, President Donald Trump arrived in Qatar after a meeting with the Syrian President Ahmed al-Sabah in Saudi Arabia. Trump's meeting with Syrian leaders follow his announcement that he plans to lift sanctions on Syria. In Qatar, Trump is attending a state visit, which includes a state dinner with Qatarian leaders. Additionally, Qatar has offered the U.S. government a luxury jet for temporary use. Though the offer raises security concerns, Trump has defended accepting the offer, emphasizing the need for the U.S. to have the best resources. A Los Angeles judge has reduced the sentences of Eric and Lyle Menendez, making them eligible for parole after more than 30 years after they killed their parents in 1989. Judge Michael Jesek resentenced the brothers to 50 years to life, considering the rehabilitation efforts in prison, including educational programs and incentives to help fellow inmates. Brothers who argued they acted in self-defense after years of abuse apologized in court for their actions. The case, which gained renewed attention through Netflix dramas, will now be considered by the state parole board, which could grant their release as soon as next month. Governor Gavin Newsom has also been reviewing the clemency request. The district attorney opposed the resentencing, citing concerns about the brothers' continued denial of full responsibility for their actions. A recent report shows that Ukrainian refugees in Poland are facing rising abuse and hostility, including bullying in schools and discrimination on public transport. Public support for refugees has dropped sharply from 81% in 2023 to 50% in 2025. The shift in sentiment is linked to the political polarization, with far-right and conservative candidates in Poland's presidential race opposing further aid to Ukraine. Disinformation campaigns backed by Russia have fueled anti-Ukrainian sentiment, leading many refugees to feel increasingly unwelcome in Poland. And that is it for this week's headlines.
Ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of recycling and trash in Western North Carolina and beyond? Green Assistant Radio, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Asheville FM, digs deep into what you're being told about what you waste, as well as what you can do to find the life left in your stuff. Tune into Green Assistant Radio, where we get real about going green, on your community radio station, 103.3 Asheville FM, and in the archives at ashevillefm.org.
Sandy and Haley, thank you for joining us today. You're here to talk to us about Strive Not to Drive, which is happening
May 16th through 24th.
All right. Well, tell us about Strive Not to Drive.
Yeah, Strive Not to Drive is a regional event that encourages people to bike, walk, ride the bus, carpool, basically trying out new modes of transportation instead of driving alone to their destinations, whether that's to work or recreation, and just encourages them through a series of fun and educational events where they can win prizes for participating.
And you're encouraging them with some prizes. You have some special prizes. You want to tell people about what they might get for deciding not to drive their car for a week?
Yeah, we have 20 tickets for the Asheville tourists to give away. We have several free bus passes for the ART bus system here in Asheville. And we also have a swag bag of prizes from Liberty Bicycles.
All right.
Bus and want to keep taking advantage of it and get a free ride, or maybe people who have been interested in taking the bus in Asheville but haven't given it a try yet. So you can get on the bus at any bus stop location and start riding, or you can get on in the downtown transit center on Cox Ave and go for a ride or take a trip to any destinations you're trying to get to.
And if they want to figure out if the routes work for them, where do they go to figure that out and what the schedules are and all that stuff?
Yeah, on our city website, so ashevillenc.gov. Actually, don't know if that's right. I feel like it is.
All right, do a pause.
Yeah.
Count to five.
Let me double check.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
People who are interested in learning more about the transit system and finding the maps and schedules can go to ashevillenc.gov. There's a department page called Transit, and you can find all the information there about how to ride and where you can ride. And you can also find out more information about for example, how to take your bike on the bus if you're interested in riding with your bike as well.
And so, speaking about bikes, is every bus enabled to take bikes? Are all routes served for bikes?
Yes, every bus in Asheville has a bike rack on the front of the bus, and that can usually fit 2 to 3 bikes on each bus.
All right. Well, I look forward to the day that that's not enough. But for right now, we'll go with it. And the system is bike friendly, and I know Asheville is trying to be bike friendly, but what about the county and the region? How are we doing with making a pot? I know where I live in Yancey County, I don't dare ride the bike on the roads. There's just, I tried it once or twice. My life was at risk. And much as I'd love to do it, I just don't feel safe, you know?
Yeah, so we're working on developing what's called the Hellbender Regional Greenway System, and that's going to spread around a lot of the different counties and tie into a lot of the greenways that already exist, but extending them even further. And so if you know the Wilma Dykeman Greenway, there's the Reed Creek Greenway, but also extending into including Oklawaha and Henderson County, there's a new Saluda Grade Trail, the Acusta Trail, lots of different ones around the region, and we hope to have all of these connect and kind of Asheville might be the central hub where they all meet up, but spreading out into a lot of different counties around the area.
And so then that brings up a question I didn't have written down ahead of time, but that I want to ask. Are you also thinking about creating parking places for people who have to drive to a trail that they can get on? So you can put your bike on your rack, drive to a place, get on it, get on the trail, bike, and then get back to your thing. Is that part of the plan?
Yeah, I think ideally we want to get to a point where we have such a connected multimodal system that people don't have to drive to, you know, start riding somewhere or walking somewhere to feel safe. But whenever we're working on these greenway projects, for example, we're always considering parking as part of the project scope and considering those options.
Right, because I have to expect that I will not be able to bike by the time there's a greenway path from CeeLo to, right. to Asheville, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I would be so happy if there were one, and I would love to do it. I could do it still, but doesn't seem like anytime soon, you know? And then what about the regional aspect of this? I know this isn't just Asheville, it's the whole region. Can you tell us about other things that are happening in the Strive Not to Drive Week in the region?
Yeah, so Henderson and Haywood counties are participating in Strive Not to Drive this year, and this is the biggest Strive Not to Drive Week that either of those counties have ever had, especially Haywood County. This is a really big year for them. They actually had the city of Waynesville adopted a ceremonial proclamation declaring Strive Not to Drive Week. They're having a bikes, buses, and brews social ride at Frog Level Brewing. They even made a new commercial for their transit system for Strive Not to Drive Week that had the Mr. Moon Asheville tourist mascot in it, which was very cute. And Hendersonville has, I think, close to 7 or 8 events going on. They have Learn to Ride the Bus events and bike rides and all kinds of different great stuff going on.
All right, cool. And what about, it kind of refers to the question I already asked, are you looking at creating multiple parking sites for people who would be happy to take a shuttle into Asheville, maybe with their bike, mm-hmm. or maybe take the bus system and avoid having to drive into Asheville? I know that literally it used to be that my wife and I would come to Asheville 2 or 3 times a month, go to the movies and eat out. And then the tourist thing got so big and so crowded and the traffic was so intense and it was so hard to find a parking place that we just stopped doing it. Less. We didn't decide. We just didn't feel we were up to it. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened and we've never really recovered. Now if we eat in Asheville 3 times a year, that's about how much is happening. Mm-hmm. And that's not a choice. If it were easier to get into town and not have to worry about parking, I think we would take advantage of that. So are we looking at doing that, creating parking areas where there are buses coming out to those parking areas and bringing people into town?
That's a great question. We have, so NCDOT, the State Department of Transportation, has park and rides around the region, but most of them aren't connected to any transit system. And so they're more like park and carpool with a friend mm-hmm. type of yep. systems.
Yeah.
But Mountain Mobility is the Buncombe County transit system. And so for people who live in Black Mountain or Weaverville or other parts of the county besides Asheville, there are ways to ride those buses and connect into Asheville from there. And so if you lived in one of those areas, it is possible to ride the bus to Asheville and, you know, maybe park at Walmart or Ingles or one of the stops there and just leave your car in that parking lot to ride into town. But as far as a regional transit system, there isn't anything like that as of right now. I do have hopes of a regional transit system someday. And right now the Land of Sky Regional Council is working on getting some van pools started in the region, but that'll be more focused on commuters and less for, recreational trips into town. So there's a few things in the works, but nothing in the near term. For what right, you're talking
yeah.
about.
I was afraid that was going to be the answer.
I can also add, so there's a park and ride at the Goodwill on Patton Ave, but that of course only works if you're living near that region. But I would just add the city's transit division right now is undergoing a comprehensive operational analysis. So they're looking at how they can improve our transit system. And so again, if you go to ashevillenc.gov and go to the transit website, there's a survey right now that you can provide feedback on what you're needing to actually make our transit system work for you. And I think this is a great place to start that conversation.
And so I live in Yancey County. Can I take part in that survey?
I think you can take part in the survey, but right now, our service isn't going out to Yancey.
Oh, I know. So, yeah. Like I said, I don't think I'll be alive by the time that happens. I hope it happens. Yeah. For the future, we need it.
Yeah.
But I would love it if I could drive to Weaverville Park.
Right.
And there'd be a way that I had public transportation that got me into town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be good enough for me. I'll be quite happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And so tell us about the Land of Sky Regional Council and what its mission is and its role in Strive Not to Drive and other efforts you're taking to improve the quality of life and our environmental appropriateness here in the Western North Carolina.
Yeah, so the Land of Sky Regional Council is a 5-county government that covers Buncombe, Haywood, Henderson, Madison, and Transylvania counties. And it includes the French Broad River Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is who I work for, which is the transportation planning branch of it. But the Land of Sky Regional Council is much bigger than just transportation. There's the Area Council on Aging, there's Economic and Community Development, and you know, the Mountain Area Workforce Development Board. There's lots of different initiatives aimed at helping people in our region. There's lots of course, Helene recovery efforts and things going on right now. I would say sustainability is one of our efforts, especially with my role in trying to get people to bike, walk, ride the bus, just get around in a more sustainable way, because anything that we can do to take the load off of the streets, right, from if we just get 5 more people to stop driving alone, then that's like 75 feet less of queuing traffic that you have to sit in, you know, if you are driving. And so really anyone that we can get to use sustainable transportation is better for everyone who uses our transportation system.
All right. And is there anything I haven't asked you all that you would really love to tell our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. The best way to get involved with Strive Not to Drive is to check out our website. It's strivebeyond.org. And that'll have the list of all the events that are going on. And there's a lot of different prizes that we're giving away for people who will participate. We've got free tickets to the Asheville Tourist. We have free bus passes, a swag bag from Liberty Bicycles. So there's lots of different ways to get involved.
And I remember I forgot a question I was going to ask earlier on. And that is, there's an employer program that works with the bus system. And that might really appeal to some employers, especially if they don't have trouble, if they have trouble providing parking or their employees have trouble finding parking and they get in late because they couldn't find a place to park. So tell our listeners about the employer program.
Yeah, that's through our ART system. Yeah, our transit system has an employer-based program called our Passport Program, and that allows employers to enter into a contract with the city to provide free transit rides for their employees at a discounted rate to the employer. So the rate is 52 cents instead of the regular $1. And I think that's a great incentive for employers to be able to give their employees, especially right now in our economy when recruitment and retention for hiring may be more difficult. This is just another incentive to help people get to their jobs and enjoy their jobs.
And it just gets more and more expensive to maintain a car. And if you don't have to drive it into the city, which is the worst wear and tear, you're going to be not spending as much on your car at a time when we're all aware of what it costs to keep body and soul together. Well, this sounds like a great week. I hope our listeners are inspired and a lot of them figure out how not to drive next week. And thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Programming support is brought to you by our contributing listeners and Citizens and Vinyl, a record pressing factory and cafe in downtown Asheville. Citizen Vinyl offers craft cocktails, Saturday brunch, and factory tours in the historic Citizen Times building. For menu, cafe hours, and more information, go to citizenvinyl.com.
Hey, Kendall. Good to have you back. Recently, we had you on to talk about a chance for our community to comment on EPA new regulations on PFAs, but there's something new happening that is kind of immediate. So we're going to talk today about a bill that would give pesticide companies immunity in courts. Last year, we covered that, and this was in other states. But at the time, we reflected that it might happen here, and sure enough, it's happening here. So this is not a surprise, and it's exposing the community to these dangerous pesticides. And is that really what the bill is about? Can you give us the details of this bill?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Patrick. So this legislation is aimed to protect pesticide manufacturers, and it has been introduced in 12 states this year across the nation. Many states have been able to defeat this, and only two states have passed this into law. But even there in North Dakota and in Georgia, there was a lot of opposition. So right now, all eyes are on North Carolina. And here we are talking about Section 19 of the North Carolina Farm Act of 2025, which is Senate Bill 639. In other states, this was a standalone bill, but here the pesticide section is included in a bigger package along with other non-pesticide things. So Section 19 specifically presumes that the EPA-approved label of a pesticide is sufficient. So the problem with that presumption is that EPA labels do not list out all of the warnings someone might want to know about before using a pesticide product. So things like this chemical has been associated with certain cancers or diseases, or this may increase your health risk. Presuming that the EPA label is sufficient means letting the pesticide company off the hook to fully warn people. These companies have manipulated data that they have shared to the EPA, and what we need more is an independent review of the safety of these chemicals. So these lawsuits that have been brought against Bayer have been about the failure of these companies to properly warn people about the true harm of their products. And in Section 19 of Senate Bill 639, that would take away the need to give a strong warning and shut down lawsuits about these labels and effectively give Bayer immunity in the courts. So if this bill passes and people continue to face health harms from pesticides, they will no longer be able to seek remedies in the court system. So there's a lot at stake with this bill, especially for farmers and families across North Carolina.
So do we have a say in this bill?
Yes, we do. As of today, which is May 14th, there has not yet been a vote on this bill. It is in the Senate, and it has been making its way through committees. And so some senators have raised questions and concerns, but the section is still in the bill, and that's a problem. So today, the North Carolina Farm Act is in the Rules Committee, which is typically the last stop before a full vote. And what we want to see happen is an amendment to remove Section 19 from the bill. We want to make sure that section does not keep moving forward in our legislature. So it makes, if it makes it to a vote in the Senate and the section is not removed, we would like to see senators vote against this bill. And then if it passed in the Senate, it would be sent to the House. And so it's a good time to reach out to your state senators and representatives on the House side and tell them why this bill matters to you in case it does keep moving forward. So I'm encouraging you to find out who your legislators are and to reach out to them about removing Section 19 from Senate Bill 639. It is not too late to fight this, and I encourage you to join us in standing up to Bayer and saying that we need to be protected, not these pesticide companies.
And so basically, it's two actions. One is to ask them to remove it, and then ask them if they fail to remove it, to then vote against it. Is that correct?
That is what we are hoping to see, yes.
Okay. So all this started out when Bayer realized that it was in deep trouble after having acquired Monsanto, which was actually about to be sued by lots of people, actually. They have now been liable for, I believe, billions of dollars of lawsuits, I think mostly for having people say that they got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from the use of Roundup. And Bayer, of course, is now probably really sorry it acquired Monsanto, and it's looking for protection. Is that true? Is that how this all happened?
Yeah, that is what is happening here. So when Bayer merged with Monsanto, it was really bad news for people concerned about corporate responsibility and bad actors in our food system. And Bayer, like you said, inherited these lawsuits from Monsanto about Roundup. And through these lawsuits, a lot of what Monsanto knew and covered up about glyphosate and Roundup has been exposed. So people have continued to learn more about the truth of the harm of these chemicals. Those exposed documents are called the Monsanto Papers. What has been made really clear is that the company knew about the harms for many years and made deliberate attempts to cast doubt and to take down scientific evidence. And so now Bayer Monsanto is still losing in the courts. They're in a corner, and this is their new tactic to avoid further financial liability. So they've lost millions in these lawsuits, but they're also putting a lot of money into lobbying to try to protect themselves from future lawsuits through these bills across different states and efforts at the federal level. But again, we are the people that need to be protected, not these chemical companies from making a business decision that turned out to not be that great for them.
Can you reflect on some of the other chemicals that would be impacted by this bill? This bill is not just protecting Monsanto, now owned by Bayer. It's going to make all pesticides, and I believe even dangerous chemicals, able to give less warning and be immune from liability. Is that true?
Yeah, so if this bill passed, it would change how the FIFRA law works. And so that is the Federal Fungicide, Insecticide, and Rodenticide Act. And in addition to glyphosate and Roundup, paraquat is another chemical that comes to mind. Paraquat is a toxic pesticide that has been banned in more than 70 countries. Paraquat is manufactured by Syngenta and has been linked to Parkinson's disease and other health outcomes. So there are also lawsuits about paraquat, and those would be impacted by Section 19 remaining in the Farm Act. With all of these chemicals, it's about protecting people from the harms these companies know about and keep hidden for their financial gain. And that's why it's important not to give them immunity. We need to be able to hold these companies accountable through all available channels, and that includes in our court system.
And so it's actually not impossible that 3M could end up with a class action lawsuit against it for PFAs. I know we had you on recently talking about the fact that there is a comment period right now for citizens to tell the APA how they feel about the regulation of PFAs. I believe it was in the handling of the processes of wastewater and where they put the sludge that's left from that, how that's handled. But PFAs are everywhere. They're pervasive. They're known to disrupt the endocrine system. They cause many problems. And Indeed, I just recently saw that we now know that PFAS are in most of our beers, including they tested beers for Asheville, Buncombe County, and Hendersonville. And this is not the brewery's problem, but it's all of our problem. And that would be another thing that all of a sudden they would not be responsible, even though it is now documented that they once again knew in the 50s that PFAS were very harmful. And they covered it up because they were profitable, and now they have they're insidiously in everything and everywhere and super problematic. So that would give them coverage too, right?
I think that it's mostly focused on pesticide companies for this specific section, but it does set a bad precedent. So I think what you're talking about with PFAS is definitely relevant. And I think the more that we learn about these harmful chemicals and the longer we are exposed to them, it's not surprising that there would be more lawsuits or additional lawsuits about PFAS. The problem with all of these chemicals is that they are on the market and used in manufacturing before we know the full impact of them that comes with time. We really need a change in our regulatory system to go from the current question of, has this been proven dangerous, to has this been proven safe? And with these pesticides, we are relying on the industry to tell EPA if it is safe. And we know that they do not always share the harmful findings of their products, again, for their own financial gain, like you were just saying. And I also saw that study about PFAS in beer. I haven't fully read it, but again, it's not surprising that if water is contaminated and it goes into our products or beverages, the end product would still have that contamination. So we really need these upstream solutions in this situation. The breweries and the water that comes out of our tap water at home should not have harmful levels of PFAS. And what we need is for stopping manufacturing of these chemicals and to regulate them as strong as possible with drinking water standards. And we need our state of North Carolina to be strong in implementing standards that are protective of health.
So I guess why I was thinking that 3M would be responsible is because, as we discussed last time, PFAS are in many pesticides. But I guess still it'd be the manufacturer of the pesticide that would be liable, even though the toxin that's one of the problems was made by 3M. That's probably...
Yeah, that's where it starts to get a little bit out of my expertise.
Yeah.
All of these liability.
Right.
Things, but it is really about, like, being clear about what is in these products. And when we know that it is harmful, that they are responsible for continuing to put that on the market. And they should have to warn us properly. And we don't need to be giving them immunity in the court. So I think it really is all connected.
Okay. Can you tell us a little about the work of Toxic Free NC and how people can get involved and stay abreast? I know they can go to your website and find out about the comment period for PFAS, but there are probably other things that they can learn, and you can, I'm sure, use support. So tell us about your organization, please.
Yeah, thank you so much. Toxic Free NC is a 501c3 nonprofit. We have been fighting pesticide pollution since 1986, when a community was aerially sprayed with a pesticide and really grassroots up, focused on fighting for protections in their community. And so we still carry on that legacy today and are thinking about pesticides and alternatives to these harmful chemicals, trying to really advance environmental health and justice in North Carolina. As you said, the best way to stay up to date with us is through our newsletter. It's available to sign up on our website, toxicfreenc.org. We're also on Instagram and Facebook if you're on those platforms to follow along. And we also accept donations to support our work. We're really trying to figure out how to keep sharing messages so people can take action in this time where there's so much happening, but so much really at stake for the health of our communities. And thank you again for having me back on the show to talk about this.
Thank you for joining us. And of course, folks, comment to your legislature, even if you think this bill is a good idea. Our being involved is the critical thing. Making sure that our legislators are acting in our interest and expressing that to them is the critical part. And I'm so grateful for the work the Toxic Free NC does, and I hope I don't need to have you on again anytime soon.
Well, I'd be happy anytime. But again, yes, thank you so much. And thank you all for reaching out to your legislators about this.
Okay. Goodbye.
This is Cosmic Brew, your quick dose of astronomy on Asheville FM. I am Luis Chavarria, an astronomer from Chile, and in the next few minutes, we will explore the universe together. Look up and join me.
Love is now the stardust of yesterday.
Stardust, performed by Nat King Cole. Have you heard the phrase, "We are made of stardust"? What does that really mean? Are we from space? Well, yes, and it's not just poetry, it's science. When the universe began, all matter was made of just three elements, hydrogen, helium, and a tiny bit of lithium. So one might ask, what about the rest of the periodic table? Where did the oxygen we breathe come from? The calcium in our bones? The iron in our blood? All elements are built from the same basic parts, protons, neutrons, and electrons. The only difference between one element and another is how many of these particles they have. Hydrogen, for example, has just one proton and one electron. Iron, on the other hand, has more than 20 of each. And the more complex the element, the more energy it takes to form it. So, where does this incredible energy come from? Strong enough to slam these particles together until they stick and become a brand new atom? At the beginning of the universe, that energy came straight from the Big Bang. It was so powerful that it managed to create all the hydrogen, helium, and lithium atoms that still exist in the cosmos today. But that only covers the first row of the periodic table. What about the rest? That's where stars come in. The only place in the universe with enough energy to forge new elements is inside the cores of stars. In those stellar hearts, the pressure and temperature are so extreme that atoms fuse together, forming heavier elements. And when stars grow old and die, they release all that material back into space, like a kind of cosmic piñata bursting with carbon, oxygen, and everything needed to build new stars and new planets. Our Sun, for example, is a third-generation star. It's like a rebellious grandchild carrying the legacy of all its ancestors. And with it, Earth was born, and with Earth, us. So yes, the calcium in your bones, the iron in your blood, the oxygen you're breathing right now, it all came from stars that lived and died billions of years ago. Are we children of the stars? Absolutely. And with a family tree like that, how can you not look up at the sky with a little cosmic pride?
My stardust melody, the memory of love.
This was Cosmic Brew on Asheville FM. There is always something new to discover in the cosmos. Stay tuned for more.
Programming support is provided by Bagatelle Books, an independently owned secondhand bookstore on Haywood Road in West Asheville. Bagatelle carries a variety of used books with a focus on the rare and obscure. The store is open Monday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and is closed on Tuesday. More information is available at bagatellebooks.com or 774-5585.
I'm News Team Correspondent Lance Geyer, and this is the Weekly Activism Calendar, where you can learn how to get involved in your community this week. Today, Wednesday, May 14th, the Community Service Day with WNC Disaster Relief with NICIMA at 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The location will be emailed after registration. A full-day volunteer program for hurricane relief hosted by NICIMA and Carolina Jews for Justice. Physical labor involved, all supplies and PPE provided. From 3 to 6 p.m., the Parents Lounge will be hosted by Transmission and PF Lang Asheville, a weekly gathering for supportive parents and caregivers of queer and trans youth, aligned with Youth Outright programming. From 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., a virtual Making Connections with the NC Budget and Tax Center webinar explaining how federal and state budget decisions affect communities with tools to advocate for better public investment. Tomorrow, Thursday, May 15th, the Breakthrough Republican Senate Supermajority takes place from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Momentum Gallery in Asheville, a fundraiser with NC Attorney General Jeff Jackson to support efforts in challenging Republican dominance in the General Assembly. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in PAC Square, the Nakba Day of Solidarity demonstration will be taking place, a solemn march in remembrance of the 1948 Nakba and displacement of Palestinians. Participants are asked to wear black. Also tomorrow, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Speaking Truth to Power, A Legal Lens on Civil Disobedience will be taking place at Interfaith Action Network, a legal workshop covering civil disobedience, protest rights, and NC's Riot Act, led by attorneys Steve Agin and Joseph Bauman. And on Friday, May 16th, the volunteer cleanup will be taking place from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on State Street and New Jersey Avenue in Asheville. This community cleanup effort, all are welcome, no experience is necessary. From 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., the JVP Asheville Shabbat will be taking place in Carrier Park Pergola on 220 Ambler Road. A community Shabbat gathering with food, kids, and conversation. Masks are encouraged, supports BDS efforts. And also on Friday, Firestorm will be hosting a game night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. That is at Firestorm Books on 1022 Haywood Road, a tabletop gaming event for all skill levels. Come early for quick warm-up games, stay late for longer ones. And on Saturday, May 17th, a bed-in disability-led protest will be taking place from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. This is a virtual protest and awareness campaign focused on disability rights and accessibility. All are welcome to join or perform. Also on Saturday, from 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Gray Eagle will be hosting a drag show fundraiser, a fabulous drag show fundraiser supported by Transmission, hosted by Stasia, tickets available online. On Sunday, May 18th, the Asheville Tool Library open house will be taking place from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. on 16 Smith Mill Road. Learn about tool lending memberships and volunteer opportunities, friendly community atmosphere. Also on Sunday, Firestorm Books will be hosting a Asheville Prison Books packaging party from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. This is a monthly volunteer event for packaging and sending free books to incarcerated people in North Carolina and South Carolina. From 1:30 p.m. to 5 p.m., the We Will Not Be Silent, A Day of Action for Lives at Risk will be taking place as a mass die-in protest highlighting Medicaid cuts, deportations, and anti-LGBTQ violence. It is a creative protest using tombstone props. Location is to be announced. Also on Sunday from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Little Jumbo on 241 Broadway Street, Jazz for the Woods will be taking place. It is a jazz performance and fundraiser to save UNCA Woods featuring Asheville Jazz Collective. Doors open at 4:30. And on Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Firestorm Books will be hosting Inter-Rebellion film screening and discussion. It is a screening of a documentary about Chile's 2019 uprising, followed by a discussion hosted by Blue Ridge Anarchist Black Cross. Masks required indoors. On Monday, May 19th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., Asheville Tool Library will be hosting Intro to Wrenching, is a car maintenance workshop, free with donations encouraged, hands-on car maintenance class. Learn tool safety, tire removal, and more. RSVP is required. And on Tuesday, May 20th, the Trans Writing Circle will be taking place from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Firestorm Books. It is a creative space for trans, non-binary, and non-gender-conforming writing. Bring a project or use provided prompts. And lastly, on Tuesday, May 20th, there will be a virtual event from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. This is a virtual panel about the life of Martin Sustry, a political prisoner and radical thinker. This will be hosted by Garrick Felber, Lorenzo Irvin, and William C. Anderson. And that is it for your activism calendar this week. If you have any events you would like listed on this calendar, feel free to email us at news@ashevillefm.org. We'll be right back here next week with your next week's event calendar.
Programming support is brought to you by Horizon Records in Greenville, South Carolina, selling used vinyl and CDs with bargain bins as well as rare and collectible albums. Genres include rock, blues, jazz, hip-hop, world, and classical. More information is at horizonrecords.net. And now it's time for the Tailgate Market Report from the Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project. While ramps have finished up for the season, markets are full of spring alliums like green garlic, garlic scapes, onion scapes, leeks, green onions, chives, and more. The onion and garlic family, also known as edible alliums, are a fond flavor for humans and have been used in cooking and as natural medicine for thousands of years. Commonly found in our front yards, the wild onion is the ancestor to all varieties of allium and was originally cultivated in nearly every part of the world. This time of year, after surviving a long and cold winter, garlic gets ready for its zesty debut. If you're eager for some fresh garlic, many vendors have green garlic, immature garlic that must be used quickly or refrigerated. Before garlic is dug up and cured, hardneck varieties send up a curly scape in attempts to form a flower and make seeds. These scapes are snapped off the plant so the garlic can focus its energy on building a bigger bulb. This also marks about a month until garlic can be harvested for curing. Both garlic scapes and green garlic can be used in recipes that call for garlic cloves. Garlic scapes are similar to asparagus in texture, but have a mild garlicky flavor. Some early varieties of garlic should start making scapes soon, so be on the lookout at markets in the coming weeks. Make a garlic scape pesto, roast them like asparagus, add them to savory scones, or puree them into a hummus. Garlic scapes are easy to preserve too. If you want to savor their flavor for later, quick pickle them, lacto-ferment them, or dry them to blend into a powder for green scape seasoning. Find green garlic and garlic scapes from Lee's One Fortune Farm at Asheville City, West Asheville, River Arts District, East Asheville, Weaverville, and Black Mountain Markets. Wild East Farm at River Arts District Farmers Market, Root Bottom Farm at Elgate Market, and Ivy Creek Family Farm at North Asheville and Weaverville Markets. Similar to garlic scapes, the Lees have onion scapes too, which are the flowering stalks of the tip of the plant. The less popular, but nonetheless delicious, cousin of green garlic are leeks. This allium has a mildly sweet onion flavor, but with a distinctive twist. Leeks taste great by themselves when roasted or sautéed and make for a perfect addition to any pasta dish, quiche, soup, and more. Of course, there's the classic potato leek soup for a rainy day, but another favorite way to enjoy this vegetable is by braising them. Start by sourcing 8 leeks. Leeks tend to collect soil particles in their layers, so be sure to give them a good rinse. Cut off the root end and the dark green parts, the leaves can be saved and added to a homemade broth recipe. Cut the leeks in half lengthwise and remove any additional dirt. Arrange the leeks in a deep skillet, pour in a cup and a half of broth, and bring to a simmer. Cover and simmer on low for 15 minutes. Preheat your oven to 350 degrees and butter a casserole dish. Transfer the leeks to the dish in a single layer and pour in the remaining broth. Dot with 2 tablespoons of butter, season with salt and pepper, and add any fresh herb sprigs like thyme or rosemary. Transfer to the oven and bake for 30 minutes or until tender. Garnish with fresh herbs and enjoy. You can find leeks from vendors like Gaining Ground Farm at North Asheville Tailgate Market and Highgate Farm at Asheville City, West Asheville, and River Arts District Markets. Soon, many vendors will have yellow onions, red onions, and shallots to offer too. If you want to keep that onion flavor going all year long, pick up a perennial chive plant for your garden. Chives are cold hardy and will keep coming back year after year. Plant in full sun and harvest for your recipes as needed. Find chive plants from Herbs and Roots Nursery at West Asheville Tailgate Market, Full Sun Farm at North Asheville and River Arts District Markets, and Kindland Farm at Asheville City and River Arts District Markets. At markets now, you'll also find strawberries, rhubarb, kohlrabi, cabbages, asparagus, turnips, beets, radishes, carrots, the first cucumbers, mushrooms, microgreens, a wide variety of tender and hardy greens, and more. Markets offer an abundance of farm-fresh eggs and meats, including chicken, pork, beef, and lamb. You can also get bread, cheese, pastries, fermented products, drinks, and prepared foods. During springtime, find annual and perennial plant starts for your gardens, along with fresh flowers. As always, you can find information about farms, tailgate markets, and farm stands, including locations and hours, by visiting ASAP's online local food guide at appalachiangrown.org. Asheville City Market is Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon on North Market Street between Woodfin and East Walnut. North Asheville Tailgate Market is Saturdays from 8 to 12 at UNC Asheville Lot P34 at 275 Edgewood Road. Black Mountain Tailgate Market is Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon at 130 Montreat Road. West Asheville Tailgate Market is Tuesdays from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. at 718 Haywood Road. River Arts District Farmers Market is Wednesdays from 3 to 6 p.m. at AB Tech at 24 Fernahurst Drive. Weaverville Tailgate Market is Wednesdays from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Weaverville Community Center at Lake Louise at 60 Lakeshore Drive. Lester Farmers Market is Wednesdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. at Lester Community Center. Anka Candler Farmers Market is Thursdays from 3 to 6 p.m. at 1465 Sand Hill Road. East Asheville Tailgate Market is Fridays from 3 to 6 p.m. at 954 Tunnel Road. And the WNC Farmers Market is open daily from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 570 Brevard Road. Farmers Truck Shed Number 1 is designated for farmers who sell only what they grow. And this has been your weekly Tailgate Market Report from the Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project and your community radio station, 103.3 Asheville FM.
Si de repente no pudiste anotar alguno recurso y no te lo quieres perder, entra a nuestras redes sociales que encontrarás recursos. Nos encuentras como JMProTV en Facebook e Instagram. Por ahora nos vamos a una canción, pero ya volvemos con más de La Neta Radio.
Lord, I've never lived where churches grow. I love creation better as it stood. That day you finished it so long ago, and looked upon your work and called it good. I know that others find you in the light that sifted down through tinted window panes, and yet I seem to feel you near tonight in this dim, quiet starlight on the plain. I thank you, Lord, that I'm placed so well, that you've made my freedom so complete, that I'm no slave to whistle, clock, or bell, nor weak-eyed prisoner of wall or street. Just let me live my life as I've begun, and give me work that's open to the sky. Make me a partner of the wind and sun, and I won't ask a life that's soft or high. Let me be easy on the man that's down. Let me be square and generous with all. I'm careless sometimes, Lord, when I'm in town, but never let them say I'm mean or small. Make me as big and open as the plains, and honest as the horse between my knees. Clean as the wind that blows behind the reins, free as the hawk that circles down the breeze. Forgive me, Lord, if sometimes I forget. You know about the reasons that are hid. You understand the things that gall or fret. Well, you knew me better than my mother did. Just keep an eye on all that's done and said, and write me sometimes when I turn aside, and guide me on that long, dim trail ahead. that stretches upward toward the great divide. Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie,